Okay, we are to number 16. This is our archery antelope. This is the second reading on this particular issue. We addressed this in December, and so I believe Mr. Norton will take this one as well. There we go. Mr. Norton, whenever you're ready, sir, go ahead.
All right, hopefully this goes a little bit more smoothly. Can you all see my screen?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you again. Good afternoon, Commission, Madam Chair, Secretary Roebling, Andrew Norton here, Wildlife Program Administrator. I believe Kevin or Tom provided you all with this packet of some slides here, just summarizing some additional information in regards to archery, deer, and antelope. So what you see here is really only need to pay attention to one of these two bullet points. They're basically saying the exact same thing, but it's illustrating what percent of the total harvest was accounted for by archery. So I took an average from 2017 to 2021, and we made some changes in 2021, so then the second bullet point is only 2021. But what you can see is it's approximately 10% of the antlerless harvest is accounted for by archery. Both whitetail and mule deer. You can see it's 11 to 9% on that first bullet point, but you can think about it as maybe 1 in 10 female deer are being harvested by archery. Goes a little bit higher for total deer because likely archery is accounting for a little bit higher proportion of the antlered animals, so 15% for whitetails and 13% of the total deer harvest was mule deer. That was the average from 2017 to 2021. We don't have the 2022 harvest data yet because we are in the process of administering those surveys. And then at the bottom here is just a table that shows total harvest by antlered and antlerless mule deer and whitetail deer. This is across all seasons, so this includes firearm harvest, muzzleloader harvest, refuge, archery, youth, and all the seasons. One thing I will point out in this table, I won't go through all the numbers, but it's there for your reference, is that there was that change to the youth season where mule deer antlerless harvest was not allowed in the northwest part of the state, and that was set up to hopefully reduce antlerless mule deer harvest by a few hundred animals. And as you can see there with the red arrow, in 2021, harvest went down by over 400 antlerless mule deer. So that's a good thing, as most of the commission is well aware. We're trying to do what we can in several areas of the state to increase mule deer populations. And that's kind of what I'll lead into with these figures here. Again, I won't go through all eight of these, but the sequence here is it's for each species and each cohort. So the two cohorts would be adult male, which would be your antler deer, and then I'm going to move into antlerless deer. So within each one of those cohorts, there's a figure for total harvest, such as this one here, and then the next figure is just going to show the harvest for archery. So two things you can do here, just with mule deer total harvest, oftentimes, especially in states with pretty consistent harvest, you can actually look at antlered harvest as an index to population. So very roughly, it's a nice comparison here, this top figure for antlered mule deer, 2007 to 2010. So that would be right at or just before the peak densities we had of deer probably in the state for most areas, compared to 2017 to 2020. So more of a recent 10 years later average. And you can see some really interesting things here. Some things such as the south part of Perkins County, you can see mule deer buck harvest went from 261 to 324, so actually higher there. Not a perfect correlation with the population, but as you'll hear from staff and see from recommendations, that we've got a fairly healthy mule deer population in the northwest part of the state. Compare that to Gregory County there, just west of the river, the southernmost county, where 2007 to 2010, 285 mule deer bucks were harvested, whereas now recently 39 animals were harvested. So a county I'm very familiar with and extremely apparent, hardly see any mule deer there anymore. And that's the case in a lot of what I'd kind of call the periphery of mule deer range here. Everywhere outside that northwest core part of the state, we see, you'll see in this figure, a fairly significant decrease in the harvest. So then the next slide, like I said, there's a trend here where I went from total harvest to then showing the figure just for archery harvest. So for bucks, again, bucks aren't going to drive the population. I mentioned that last commission meeting, but it does give an idea again to somewhat where this harvest is occurring. Not as much change in archery harvest because it's generally low. What I'm going to move into here is actually mule deer female harvest. And this is where you really can see where, if you're thinking about a population level change, and we looked at these figures a lot, I think it was 2 years ago when we considered changes to deer hunting regulations to hopefully enhance mule deer populations. We looked at this female harvest because this is going to really drive the population. So total harvest, you can see, again, a lot of that is occurring in the northwest part of the state. The Black Hills was a key area that was focused on. Got that down to 100 in 2017 to 2020, and then with the changes to the youth season might have reduced that quite a bit more. Looking into archery, because I believe that's a topic of interest, how many female mule deer are harvested with archery? So again, back to the heyday, 2007 to 2010, you can see even then we had really low numbers of female mule deer harvest. Everywhere in the state, with the exception of the Black Hills there, we had 89 female mule deer harvested 10 to 15 years ago on average. Whereas you see now, that number is down to 22. So I guess referring back to Gregory County would be a good example. Not many mule deer there, so we probably don't want to kill any, but changes to archery regulations might only save one female deer that's being harvested by archery equipment in that county. So this kind of gives an idea of any considerations to changes of the seasons. I won't go through any of the other slides. I'll just kind of go through the overview. Is the next one here is going to be adult whitetail male deer. That was total the first one. The next one was archery, and then females total in archery. So with that, I can leave this up for a second if there's any questions on specific slides, but otherwise, hopefully it's a fairly nice reference as you, the commission, consider any potential changes to the recommendations or proposals.
All right, thank you, Mr. Norton. Tom, I'll look to you. Where do we go? I'm not quite, who's presenting next? And I do have a question. I had introduced 16 on antelope, and I know we'll have to follow this as well, but we're on 16. Are we good there?
Madam Chair and members of the Commission, those listening, and Tom Kirschman, Director of the Wildlife Division. Yeah, so on your Commission book, item number 16 is the archery antelope season, and then the next one, 17, would be archery deer. Andrew, thank you for going over that information. We had shared that information with the commissioners, and they had asked that we present that again for those listening in, really to articulate and show what that harvest level is, in particular on the antlerless harvest or the doe harvest of mule deer that has been part of these conversations. Madam Chair, Andrew, I don't know if you have any other information to share at this point in time, but you have your two proposals in front of you related to archery, the antelope and the deer. This would be your second reading. This would have been the opportunity based on public input, more conversations and thoughts from you as the commissioners. We as an agency reviewed these again, went over the information, looked at the comments. Obviously the comments are wide in what we expected, right? There was going to be a diversity of comments, different thoughts and perspectives. As we went over it, we are bringing forward no recommended changes to your proposal as you have it written here in both of your action sheets. So it would be the thing of turning it over to you as the commissioners where you would like to go next with the proposals, your proposals in front of you right now to take for the next 30 days, which will then whether you accept and go move forward with these proposals or make any adjustments, then we will do the public notice and go through that rule promulgation process, public notice, public input, for your finalization action at the March meeting. So we have no recommended changes for either one of the action sheets. Again, as a quick overview for both of them, it would be putting in some limitations on the number of non-resident archery hunters, both antelope and deer, for the opportunities to have the ability to hunt on public land for those non-resident archers. On the antelope side, it would be 450 licenses that would be available for an application lottery draw process. If that is the number you go with or the approach you go with, through that lottery draw, a successful applicant would then be able to hunt on public land and private land. From the antelope perspective, the second piece of that then is there is no limitation. It'd still be unlimited for those individuals that wanted to obtain a private land license only. And then the same thing would be for deer. On the deer action sheet, that would limit it to 2,200 applications, which is approximately a 25% reduction from the numbers that we had from previous data of participation. And again, that would be through a limited draw. And if you are successful in drawing one of those, you would have the ability to hunt on both public and private land. And then there would be unlimited number of licenses available for archery deer on private land as well. The other piece for deer that would be an important part to remember also, it would take away that April 1 application deadline, because if you recall, remember, that was originally put in place by you as the commission to help limit those numbers. And if somebody was that adamant and interested in coming to South Dakota to hunt on public land, they would have to have their application in by April 1st. With having a limited number and actually lottery draw, that date would not be necessary, and the lottery draw would handle that piece of it. So, Madam Chair, we'll turn it over to you as a commission body and let you determine which way you want to go. We have no recommended changes to your proposals that you have in front of you right now.
At this point, do any of the commissioners have any questions for either Andrew or Director Kirschenman? Commissioner Spring.
Is there a real reason to pull that off of the April 1st for the applications to be in? Could not that be left there at that point so that, you know, if people in other states don't draw, then they're more apt to come here. I just wonder what the reason is of taking that off.
Madam Chair. So, Commissioner Spring, valid question, and the number one reason is it's just flat out, quite honestly, necessary from the intent and purpose of what was originally why it was put in there. And again, the purpose was if somebody was that interested to come to South Dakota to go archery hunting, you needed to put it in by April 1st. If you didn't, then you were not allowed to hunt on public land. You were restricted to private land only. By having a limited number of licenses available to hunt on public land, that negates the necessity of that. So it would simplify it. It would clarify and simplify the application process as well. And we would just do the lottery draw for the individuals that put in for those 2,200. Then we can submit this and do it all at one time here this spring as well.
Tom, can you just explain, if you're a non-resident applying, how that would look?
Under the structure?
Yes.
So the question was from Secretary Roebling, what would the application process look like under your proposal? And so we would have, should you move forward with this, we get this finalized, then we would set up an application time period, an application deadline, where we would then conduct the lottery draw. No different than what we do for the rifle seasons, the combined deer draw. So there would be an application process if you are interested in hunting on public land. Now, for that individual that has a family farm or ranch or knows somebody that you've been hunting on for years and that's where you're going to go, and it's private land, you wouldn't even have to submit your application by the application period or deadline. You could go ahead and submit it next August, for example, or 2 days before you're ready to come out hunting, because it would still be unlimited on private land. So the application period, deadline, and drawing would just apply for those that would be interested in hunting on public land.
Any other questions or comments at this point? Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah. Commissioner Whitmire, just on these proposals, when we first got talking about, they said it was last summer or something, and the points well made by the hunters and others were that, you know, we've got a changing atmosphere out there with archery, you know, especially the non-resident component, a lot of interest, and I think we all really felt committed to doing something to curb that. And so with what we've got today for proposals, you know, we're not fixed on these numbers for exact caps where that would be. I'm kind of wishing that Commissioner Beast was here as well. He's got some good insight and thoughts as well. And so, just to clarify what we set today, putting it as is, which is, you know, what I'm supportive of, that is, those numbers can still be modified upon finalization. Is that correct?
Madam Chair. Commissioner Whitmire certainly would have the opportunity to do some final adjustments on it. What we would just need to do is make sure that the public notice, how it's written, what it all includes, would allow that ability and flexibility to make minor adjustments to it. So the important part is just writing the public notice, how it's written, the details of it, the information that's included with it, to give and allow that flexibility to make some minor adjustments to that.
So is there something that needs to be rewritten to where that number is subject to change, or can we just put it through in that?
Madam Chair, Mr. Katilna can certainly chime in here, but I think what is probably even more important right now is you retain your proposal if that's what you want to move forward with, so that the public knows exactly what they're commenting on as well, looking into the next month and leading up to finalization. But you're also making it on the record right now as well that you may look at and consider some minor adjustments to those numbers should you desire to have finalization as well.
Anyone else? Commissioner Spring.
To add on something like the ranch or place, private land that you're going to go out on if you're a non-resident, well, what would it take? I mean, would that be a whole change just to have that so that when they apply, they have to put down a name or a residency that they're going to? I think it was brought up, and I thought about it before, but I forgot to discuss it this morning. But I was just wondering what all that would take. Is that going to throw a wrench into things or not?
Madam Chair, Commissioner Spring, I believe that if the desire of the commission is to include information in respect to a landowner's name on the application, that could be something that could be described as part of the application requirements or something of that nature within the rules and regulations in terms of potentially adding that. Just as a background information in respect to that point, the only licenses right now that we do require a landowner's name when you submit an application is for special buck. Regardless if you're a resident or non-resident, special buck applications do require a landowner's name. We also have private land licenses for antlerless deer in the West River deer season. There might even be a unit or two in East River deer season as well. Where they are private land licenses or antlerless licenses, but private land licenses, and in those particular licenses, we do not require the name of a landowner. We just designate them as their antlerless licenses for private land, and we have those in place in units where we do want to harvest deer, right, from a population control perspective. And so what we did is created some units that have the license type of private land. But in those particular licenses, we do not require, or that requirement is not in place for submitting a landowner's name to obtain that type of license. So, you know, there are differences, but yet there's similarities here, right? We're talking about potential licenses that are on private land, but in special buck is really the only one that requires that. Where in this case, I would just think that licenses for archery hunting on that would be valid on private land only, especially because they're unlimited, would fall more similar to those private land antlerless licenses in the West River deer season where we don't require a landowner's name as well.
What worries me is just like one of the people that spoke today, people come to the state, they drive for 4 days to find some place to hunt, and didn't have a place to hunt when they applied for this. That's what worries me, is how many, it's kind of dishonest to say you're going to hunt on private land when you don't have any place to hunt, but where if they had a name on there, you could find out whether or not they really even did. I don't know, maybe it's not that big a deal, but I think it might be a very important one.
Any other comments at this point? Questions? I will share this. I know all of us on the commission have received numerous emails and phone calls, and we've talked to folks that have wanted a change. And when this came before us, we made the decision to bring folks together, and they did, and we came up with a compromise. And even as the department provided their suggested changes to us, I was still on the fence as I was getting information from folks in the public as to the pressures they were seeing and the lack of deer that they were seeing. As of today, the information that's been shared to us by the department, Andrew Norton, thank you for pulling those numbers together. For me, that helps solidify when we talk about archery hunting. Those numbers have gone down over the years. Those numbers, the science does not show that we have this large take from the archery hunters. And so with that, I appreciate the proposal that's been brought. I think it is a good compromise. Those numbers have been lowered. We're still considering the landowners and those guides that make a living off of this. And I feel very comfortable with the proposal at hand. Any other comments? Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, final thoughts on the private lands capabilities for non-residents. You know, as a father of three sons with, you know, when they leave the place, get married, and take up a life of residence, you know, wherever. I mean, mine, fortunately, are all still in state. But, you know, had that not been the case, I would sure like some avenue for the kids to come home, and that's, so it's not just outfitters, I think, that we're, you know, and certainly for me, it's not just outfitters I'm thinking of when I think of the non-resident component for someone to come home. I'm also thinking the family members, you know, to be able to come home. At least you can archery hunt deer. If you can't rifle hunt, it's an opportunity to at least, you know, hunt at the family farm, you know, in many cases as they would have as they were being raised, and anyway, so that's another significant part for me. So, yeah, I am supportive of the petition as is, and I, so, yeah, I would move, I guess, the animal first.
Well, I understand if there are no changes made, we don't have to take action on this, so we'll just move to finalization.
Okay.
So unless we as a commission would like to put changes in, we do not have to vote on this. Commissioner Locken.
Commissioner Locken here. I just, for what it's worth, let's, my opinion would be let's move it forward, continue on this path. I think it's a compromise. It's still a good path. Let's stay with where we're at on it.
Madam Chair, so if that is your desire as the commission to move forward now with your two proposals here, we will adjust the action sheets to put them on the website so that people can see exactly what they are additionally providing comments to you on. We'll put it in the finalization sector of it. We'll get the public notice out, meet those requirements, and then folks will have the remainder of January, all of February, to provide comment until you have your next commission meeting in March where you can take your final action on at that time. So. Should there be any other questions or information you as commission want between now and then, don't hesitate to reach out to us and we'll get you that information that you need.
All right, very good. And thanks to everybody who participated in helping with this. It's been a big lift, and I know we appreciate it as a commission. With that, it is after 5 o'clock. I don't think we need to stick around here anymore. We will save the rest of the agenda for tomorrow. Do I need to move forward recess? So I need a motion.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. We are in recess.